is episode 131, Catching Up on Things. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a wonderful Friday afternoon for another exciting episode of Games at Work.biz. Biz, biz, biz. Hey, Michael, welcome back to 2016.
I know, it feels like something we need to be welcomed back to, considering how fast it's gotten ahead of us.
Yeah, it's amazing. I realized we had done our year-end show, and then all hell broke loose.
Yes, it did, didn't it? So yeah. Between the ice and the snow and the ice snow dragon and everything else, well, I'm glad we're here now. That's the important thing. We are here now.
Now. Yeah, and so there's a lot of cool things have happened in the intervening month. I was at CES again this year.
Yeah, so I'm excited to hear a little bit more about that because I've not had a chance to even really catch up with you on what you saw and what was new and what are the cool things. So I'm going to kind of kick back, put my feet up here for a moment, and just tune in to your CES experience.
Yeah, so this is the third year in a row that I've actually gone to CES for my day job. And I had gone back for my day job before, back in the 2007-2008 time. But this is really looking at the whole Internet of Things aspect of what's going on in technology. And this year's CES was, oh, how do I put this? It was interesting. But maybe it's one of those things that you kind of hate saying, because I know everybody would like to go to CES because there's all this really cool tech. It's overloading. There's so much to see. But the third year in the row, I would say it has become very incremental. There was not really anything other than some of our own announcements, which, you know, I'm going to say I like those because they were really cool. but there was nothing, any big thing that really stood out and made me go, wow, I would have never thought about that. There was a lot of incremental improvements is the best way to put it. From what I saw the last couple of years. So let me hit a couple of high points.
Okay.
Drones, again, were everywhere. What I thought was the most exciting drone was Parrot's newest drone. Parrot is the company that does a lot with quadrocopters, you know, right. The what they call their AR drone, which really is a quadrocopter, right? Is very popular, runs around $400, et cetera. But this year they introduced a drone that actually wasn't a quadrocopter. It was...
Oh, this is the plane one where you wear the goggles, right? And you can see the pilot.
Yes.
Oh, I saw that. That was awesome.
That was cool, right? And it had a single propeller behind it, right? So it's a push airplane. It's, I want to say it was almost 3 feet wide. It's very lightweight. It flies for about 45 minutes and can go up to 50 miles per hour.
Wow.
It does, you know, a 14 megapixel 1080p video camera, and it's now getting into what I would consider really drone type territory, because all the other stuff is really just an unmanned aerial vehicle, right? Because it can't fly on its own. But they had been hinting at this one for some time with technologies that they were using on the enterprise commercial side with planes that were used to map three-dimensional maps of mountain areas, you know, and other kind of industrial settings and wilderness settings where you're not going to get out there. So you need something with long battery life and SenseFly. SenseFly is the company that they acquired that had this fixed-wing one. But this is much more exciting about, you know, the ability to just toss the plane up in the air. It kind of steadies itself and then starts flying around based off of areas where you may want it to go. So that was cool. That was probably the most exciting, somewhat surprising thing to see.
Neat.
The second thing, so the way CES has gotten it, it is so big, right? The Las Vegas Convention Center has three main halls. All of those are full. Then they have stuff out in the parking lot. And then over at one of the casinos, the Venetian has the Sands connected to it. And the whole Sands Convention Center is two floors of what you would consider one floor would be a really good size convention. So it has two floors there. And in that area, I spent probably the most of my time looking at small companies and their innovation awards, which had some interesting stuff, and I'll get to that in a second. And then the whole wearables and Internet of Things space, where all the areas where you really got to see some of the really cool stuff there. And so let me talk about that briefly. So.
Okay.
The innovation space, it's kind of hard to describe this because it's very varied with the types of things that they showcase. But stuff that some of our listeners might find interesting were companies like, I'm going blank on their name. I gotta look this one up, but I'll put a link in the show notes. It was a company that had a home brew appliance.
Oh, cool!
So it was on Kickstarter. It was $500 on Kickstarter. It's $1,000 retail, and they are working with other microbrews to create kind of like a Keurig for home brewing.
Nice.
So you have a paper heavy paper cartridge that has the hops, barley, wheat, whatever ingredients, and then you have something roughly the size of a dorm fridge. And on the end of
beer.
It is a little tiny, 5-liter pony keg that it will then takes about 2 hours on the brewing process and then sit for up to 2 weeks and you have 5 liters of beer. And the idea is that the packs that they make are run between $15 and $30 a pack.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you figure $15 to $30 for 5 liters of beer, it's a significant better buy than buying a six-pack or a case, right?
Absolutely. And the shipping costs are less, too, because you're not moving liquid around because you have your own water, right?
And it's making these based off one of the people that's part of the startup. And let me see if I can find the name real quick. Because I was just going through my junk. Pico Brew. That's it. Pico Brew. P-I-C-O Brew.
Hmm. Got to check this out because that is slick.
Yeah. And so one of the people working at the company is the 2013 U.S. Homebrew Champion. And she... They had a little microbus there, and they were giving away free samples of their beer brewed from the Pico Brew on the show floor.
Wow. I'm checking this out. So, this is neat.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they have a larger one that they came out with a couple of years ago that's runs around $2,000, where you can mix all your own ingredients and kind of if you just want a way to jumpstart your home brewing. But if you want to do home brewing and you're not into all the experimentation, you can get these kits for $15 to $30 per 5 liters and have it just brew it for you. So that was cool. The other thing that was interesting, why things who we've talked about on the show before around wearables introduced a new thermometer.
Mm-hmm.
And again, with the whole fitness aspect of the Internet of Things, this was another way of monitoring your own you know, the connected self, the whole quantized self experience. And if you take their thermometer tied into their blood pressure and their scale, as well as their, you know, their pedometer and heart rate activities, they're really getting to the point where the amount of data that they can collect is just phenomenal. And these guys won a CES Best of Show Innovation Award on their new thermometer. Interesting, it's a touchless infrared thermometer that you just kind of hold up to your forehead. That was interesting. But in that same vein, there was a company, a little small startup company that I talked to in the same space that, what was it called? I'm trying to look through my, and I'll put links to my blog posts where I talked about many of these. There was a temperature tracking company, and what they had is a little patch that you would put underneath your arm, and for 24 to 72 hours, it would do real-time continuous body temperature measurements transmitted over Bluetooth, which, again, in a healthcare setting, in a laboratory setting, if you're a very aggressive fitness person, your core body temperature and knowing how it changes over activities and over the course of the day, or even in a worker safety health environment, really, really cool. And these were designed to be throwaway, right? So you'd buy a box of them.
Right.
And they're roughly, I want to say, like $1 or $2 a patch. And then you would connect it up to the app and get real-time temperature monitoring. That was kind of neat. And then the other one in that same wellness-type environment was a company called Level, L-E-V-L. And these guys were looking at identifying the fat burning that happens in your body. And, mm-hmm. and identifying what they call the level score. And the way they do it is on a daily basis, they had a little device sitting, you know, you put it on your counter, in your bathroom or whatever, and it had a little air tube that you blew into, and it would look for acetone in your breath to figure out how effective your body is at burning off fat.
Right.
And so, you know, some people just have a natural ability to just, you know, no matter what they do, their level of fat burning is significantly higher than somebody else who's eating the same way and exercising the same way, whose whole metabolism and everything tends to not burn off the fat as quickly. And the idea, again, there is take that information and how do you change your behavior, your diet, your exercise, whatever, in order to improve fat burning. Very interesting. And they're probably looking at, you know, a consumer offering sometime in the summer of this year. And then finally, again, in that whole health and fitness phase was one of the announcements that we made from years of my day job. So IBM Watson is working with Under Armour. Mm-hmm. And announced a partnership where they're leveraging, thank you. IBM Watson and tying that into MyFitnessPal, my RunKeeper, and a bunch of other applications to help look at how you are comparing with, you know, millions of other people that have similar lifestyles and similar attributes as a way of improving health and fitness.
Yeah, neat quantified self kind of stuff there to discover other people that have similar characteristics to you. I remember seeing that too. That looked really interesting from what Under Armour packaged as, they called the Health Box fitness tracking system.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And so the interesting thing there was the whole idea that the reason that Under Armour does all this stuff is ultimately you'll work out more and then they can get back to their core business and sell more shirts and shoes.
Right. Yeah. That's because that's what they say.
That's what they do.
They sell shirts and shoes, and that's what they're going to make money off of.
Yeah.
So, and then, I'm kind of curious, did you stroll past the automobile section at all?
Well, I was about to say, so that was all in the stands. Now if we go to the main place. and there's a ton more, right? I mean, I'm just cherry picking some interesting things. So the main place is three halls, north, south, and central. In North Hall is all the automotive companies. Mm-hmm. And there was some interesting stuff there. Mercedes showed off once again an updated version of their concept car from last year, which was a self-driving concept car that was just, I mean, cool looking. Chevy unveiled their new hybrid electrics as well as their Volt. There was Toyota showing off their fuel cell, as well as they showed off the algorithms that they're working in the lab around learning behavior in cars for self-driving cars. Which was kind of cool.
And tell me a little more about that. What was the learning behavior elements of that?
So what they did is they had, I want to say it was like 8 or 10, not Matchbox, but little model cars, mm-hmm. That were each connected up to an API. And when you started off, the learning set was set to zero.
Right.
And they would all drive around and they would smash into each other, et cetera. And over time, it was almost like a self-organizing experiment as the car started learning the behaviors of the other cars and ultimately ended up in a very normal traffic type environment, driving in lanes, stopping at intersections, et cetera.
Interesting.
So the whole idea of a learning environment where the cars start learning how to behave with other cars. And then, you know, we've got another link in the show notes around Ford. One of the big things, and it's been going for 3-4 years now, which is why it doesn't really come out to me much, is how do you connect the connected car to the connected garage into the connected home, right? And integrate across all these different platforms. How do you make it so the car is a method of transportation that you can still do other things during it? And Ford showed off their connection with the Amazon Echo to do things, and this is a use case we've been talking about for years, of as I get home, it automatically opens my garage door, it turns on the lights in the home, makes sure that the temperature in the house is okay, and integrates that all with the voice capabilities of the Amazon Echo appliance, right? Mm-hmm. So interesting, but a logical evolutionary step, the stuff that the industry has been talking about. The other thing in the main area was something that many people might find not surprising or surprising, depending on which side of the fence you're on, but there were tons of record players.
Oh, yeah. I've been seeing those in a lot of different places, too. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, over the last couple of years...
They don't play CDs really well, do they? You put a CD on, it just scratches it up, you know?
No, but there's been a huge kind of... I won't say huge. I've seen over the last couple of years a resurgence of people who want to hear... audio that's analog, not digital, right?
Yeah.
And record players provide analog audio. And I actually, for Christmas this past year, got a couple of LPs. What I found really cool is the first thing I always do is I rip them. I convert them to digital, but I still like to listen to them as an LP on my stereo.
Right.
And so... some of the record companies are actually releasing with the record a digital download.
Yeah.
Right?
Because
they know if they do that, then they can add their DRM and tie it to you.
Yeah.
But the other, so there was a huge display of a couple of different companies all pushing, you know, different LP players, players that would not only play, but play and rip at the same time, you know, all-in-one units that include, you know, Bluetooth streaming, so it would stream out to your Bluetooth speakers from the turntable, etc. One that I thought was really interesting was the Mustang LP player that looked like the Dash, Dash radio. Or the dash of like a 1960s Mustang muscle car, right?
Ooh, interesting.
And then the other thing that was interesting was Kodak was trying to do a resurgence, and they had a huge display of 3D printers. The Polaroid 3D printer.
Well, for taking pictures of something and then printing it right there?
No, it was pretty much just a traditional 3D printer. Matter of fact, I would say if you look at it technology-wise, it's probably about two gen back. So I think they're experimenting, trying to see if they have a way to reestablish themselves in the consumer market with something that's starting to pick up. So they were showing like drones, they were showing tablets, you know, Android-based tablets with the Kodak branding. But the Polaroid 3D printers were one and two spool printers with special cartridges of printer filament in these spools that I think would allow them to have better control of their ecosystem and not open it up for others to add their own different types of spools in. So it kind of locks you into their stuff. So there, it was really interesting to see that. And then finally, augmented and virtual reality was everywhere.
Of course.
So the Oculus
announcement of Oculus and the price point being higher than everyone thought was
actually lower. I mean, I had heard quotes of people estimating $1,500, and in fact, it was $599. Was lower than a lot of people.
Ah, okay. I thought there were some news stories that were expecting to be in the 300-ish range.
That's what the dev kit was, and the dev kit tends to be less for the early adopters.
Right.
And the other, so there was one other one, Faraday Automotive, that was showcasing their concept car to try to compete in the same space of Tesla.
Well, they unveiled the car that they were bringing forward for the first time right there, right?
Yep. But it's not really a car that's going forward. It was a purely a concept.
Yeah.
It was a way of getting buzz and attention.
So isn't there also, now I'm trying to remember, is it a GM car called the Bolt with a B instead of the Chevy car, the Volt with a V? Isn't there another one?
I don't remember seeing that one.
Hmm.
I did see my buddy, though. BB-8.
Which buddy would that be? Oh, did you now?
Yes.
Did you get a hug?
I got a picture. I got a picture with my buddy.
Well, that's very cool.
Cool.
Were you able to control him with your phone?
No. This was the actual life-size one from the movie.
Oh, from the movie?
Yes.
So I have found it. It is a Chevy Bolt, which is different from the Chevy Volt.
Yeah. No, I didn't see it.
Okay. Okay.
Cool.
Well,
that's one last thought for you.
Yeah. So that's on the Ford and Amazon integration, right? So reading about this from afar, certainly you can see where there's some event tracking and geofencing sort of stuff, which would be nice to have. You know, your garage opens when your car drives up and the lights turn on, that sort of thing. Did you see any other bigger, broader use cases that are different than what you could do with your phone right now, you know? Because in theory, your phone could do many of those things that...
Yeah, I think the auto industry is really struggling with that. Even when you think about, like, insurance, right? There's samples out there where insurance companies are even foregoing an OBD2 plug
for a phone app,
for just an app, because all the sensors are on the phone.
and people will carry their phone with them versus, oh, I forgot to plug in my OBD2
right,
port.
And they'll carry the phone with them, so if they're driving a rental car or driving somebody else's car, it's yeah. still picking up data.
Or riding with them.
Yep.
That would be interesting, too. Sorry, are you a dangerous passenger or are you a safe passenger?
Yeah, so the use, like I said, the use cases are pretty much ones that we've been talking about for years.
Yeah,
there was
okay.
nothing radically new.
All right, good. So that helps me because I was scratching my head saying, gosh, okay, what could happen here? What could you do that's different and that's different from the phone you got in your pocket? Because with all this energy being pushed into engineering around the automobile itself, as opposed to the mobile device that you've got with you almost all the time within arm's reach, what's the right place to put the investment, right?
Yep.
Okay.
And I think the industry as a whole is struggling with that.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Because that's what I was wondering about. So wow, that's a great roundup, Michael. You were there for 3 full days, was it?
I was there for the whole week. There were 3 days on the show floor.
Yeah.
And 4 days in our booth, as well as the day and a half setup beforehand.
Wow. Out of curiosity, did you track your steps? Did you make your 10,000?
I was averaging around 23,000 a day.
Wow. Yep. Not surprising. I mean, it's really spread around there in Las Vegas land.
Yeah.
And for once, you didn't get the crud until after you got home.
Well, yeah, I've been getting the crud each year after I got home, so...
Well, fantastic. Well, thank you for sharing that with me, and thanks also for putting the show notes in the show notes the blog posts that you put together for the show too, because I think that's going to be really interesting for our listeners and viewers. I guess so I can look at the pictures there to see what's going on.
Yep. So over the last last month it has been. You found some pretty interesting links also for us to talk about today.
Yeah, a couple of them. So they're gonna kind of bounce around just a little bit. And the first one is about a gaming hotel that has just recently opened up in Amsterdam. So there's a portion of Amsterdam called De Piep or something along those lines.
De Piep.
And I thought you weren't gonna try.
I had to, right? It's D-E.
Yeah.
Space. P-I-J-P.
Yes.
And maybe some of our listeners from the Nordics can, or if they're in the Netherlands, can send us an audio file and pronounce it correctly.
Yeah, there you go. So this hotel is called The Arcade, and apparently not only do they have in the rooms where you might be staying arcade console games, but the whole lobby is just full of them. So you can play modern stuff. You can play classic stuff. The picture that they have up on the webpage that I'm looking at has got some old NES-style controllers. And they're not too expensive, right? So they start at 64 euros a night. So you
well, what I thought was cool is they also have a huge comic collection with Dark Horse, DC, and others, right?
Yeah,
Dark Horse had some really good comics when it came out, and I love their expensive suite. Their most expensive suite is the Love Shack Deluxe in Spa Bed. So does that mean the B-52s sneak in your room and sing you to sleep?
Well, if they were going to sing you to sleep, you probably wouldn't be sleeping. You'd be banging on the door, baby.
Yeah.
So continuing on the theme of bouncing around a little bit, Michael, you had a link for us on Minecraft, which has been the subject that pops here time and time again. And apparently... This is the Minecraft Education Edition, which is supposed to be heading for classrooms, they say, this summer, which would be kind of silly because there's not a lot of classrooms going on in the summer, but maybe the fall would make more sense.
Yeah, I saw this one kind of middle of the month, and it was really them. They had acquired a company called, I think it's called Minecraft EDU.
Yeah.
Earlier in 2014. 2015. And the idea is to build lessons, classroom lessons and activities around STEM, history, language, and art, and to build that out into a whole education platform / curriculum for teachers, targeting different levels. Right now, I know you've talked about the work that your kids have been doing in Minecraft, actually building stuff and programming to some degree, right? You get the whole idea of coding camps that are going on for middle schoolers, and even, you know, some places around the world where college students are doing, you know, historic recreations and other stuff in Minecraft. So it really has become not just a cool platform to play, but an interesting platform for learning. And I find that just fascinating, because we talked about this way early on other virtual environments, and we've talked about it from a Minecraft perspective too. And to see that they're looking at a very, very inexpensive entry point to get education institutions, teachers, and students engaged is pretty cool.
Yeah, I like it an awful lot, and I mentioned this before here too. My oldest boy actually proposed to the principal of his school when we were in Hungary to do something just like this, create a Minecraft club to provide educational opportunities, to create things together, create some lesson plans that made sense, and it's neat to see Microsoft is really moving this forward, and it is a great platform that kids love to be in, and I think it's super. So this is another good step in the right direction to engage kids where they are, to develop their skills in programming and their skills in engineering and their skills in just a variety of ways. So yeah, I like it a lot.
Very cool.
The last link that we had to kick around today, and I know you've heard and been thinking about this a little bit more deeply than I have of late, was also from around about the middle of the month, CNN Money, other sites were talking about Verizon introducing a concept of toll-free data. So the notion was, just like you would dial a toll-free number like 1-800 or 1-888, whatever, on the phone in the U.S., to have a free call. The concept here is that there will be places where, instead of consuming against your mobile data cap, the data would be provided to you free of charge.
So yeah, and I'm trying to remember. I think it was Verizon. It might have been T-Mobile, but many of the mobile carriers are trying to do things to really partner with content providers, to where the content provider actually picks up the tab.
Right.
Right. Which is, I mean, 800 number is not free, right? Let's remember that. It's only free to the person calling in on it. The company actually picks up the tab. And so you, with all the work and argument and discussion around, The open internet and I'm going blank on the term right now. Anyway, the fact that they're worried about tiered pricing, all those things. What this effectively does?
You're thinking net neutrality, right?
That's the term, net neutrality. Okay. What this effectively does is it allows those companies who are willing to pick up the tab for the people who want their content
to provide a tiered service to do so.
Yeah, it becomes quote unquote free. Yeah. What this really could lead to is for companies that already have deep top pockets, they become the inexpensive option on the web, i.e. the free option, and the startups and small companies who have disrupted a lot with the internet by being the free option to start with until they get a certain critical mass and they can show the value and start charging for it, may get squeezed out. And I think that's the real concern with this. I think it was T-Mobile that was giving away free, you know, by free is they wouldn't count it against your data plan. If you flipped a bit, they would give you free video.
Right. Yeah. So they would do that for Netflix, Hulu, Spotify. Their program, they called it Binge On. So you could
Binge On
a show.
And what they really were doing, and they weren't just binging on those, but they were actually downgrading all video streams to 480 resolution.
Right.
And so, again, you know, it's their right to do that, but the average user, you know, may not even notice it on a mobile device, right? Because that's where most people are watching their content now. But if you've got, you know, you're streaming 4K Netflix to your TV, because they're one of the few 4K streams out there, and suddenly you were starting to use T-Mobile as a way of getting your data plan, suddenly that 4K TV is showing 480 resolution.
Right.
So I think there's a lot of controversy around these plans. I'm not going to say somebody can't do that. I mean, it's their business. They can do what they wish.
Well, they can.
But I think they need to be very open, and people need to understand what they're getting, right?
But it's still net neutrality when you think about it, right? It's creating a fast lane, flow lane.
Yeah.
Right? It's a free or subsidized versus non-free. So it's an interesting angle, given what has been decided by the FCC and others to move forward. So very, very, very interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of nosing around here a little bit on this Bolt car, and Chevy was the ones who did the Volt too, incidentally. But this is the Bolt.
Was Bolt their hybrid?
The Volt was pure electric.
No, Bolt, right? Was and Bolt the hybrid?
I'm looking right now because it's all electric.
Hmm.
It's an EV, 200 miles per charge. And their price point is kind of, I thought it was like so as low as $30,000-ish after your federal tax credit. So it's a $7,500 federal tax credit. So it's $37,500 is the MSRP.
Very cool.
And available late in 16. And it's got some nice lines to it, you know?
Well, I know we're just about out of time.
Yep, yep.
So, anything exciting you've been playing lately?
Well, I'll tell you, I've stopped playing, right? So, one of the things that I strive to do at the beginning of the year is to not so much make New Year's resolutions, but try to take stock of things and spend some time thinking about where I want to be and where I want to spend my time. So, I'd found myself playing the Star Wars game a little bit too much, we'll just say. And
yeah, because you kept blowing past me.
Well, I know I did, but it was a grinding kind of game. And I'm trying to get myself into a mode where even if I'm going to do something for a few minutes in between things, that I'm not going to get lapped into or locked into a grinding game where you've got to do a lot of mindless, meaningless stuff to just level up to open a little bit of content to start do some more grinding, basically.
Yep.
So I said, you know what? Done with that, deleted it, it's off my device, and I'm keep on trucking, and I'm a little bit happier. So that was one of the things that I decided I was going to do at the beginning of the year, and I haven't looked back. That's been a good choice. And you and I both did that, I think, with the Simpsons game and the Family Guy game around about this time last year, I think, wasn't it?
Is that what actually, it was the year before. Enough?
Was it 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the same sort of thing there. I mean, those were good because the drip, drip, drip of new content was pretty a fast drip, and you didn't have to grind as much, but there was still a lot of grinding in there. So that's my, what am I playing? I'm actually not playing.
Cool. Well,
how about you?
My new thing is the newly rebranded website.
I love that.
Yes. The Triangle App Show that was an idea that never really got to fruition has been rebranded as my own personal site. All the content's there from before, and I'll put reviews there. Things that I do, things that are interesting over at michaelrose01.com.
That's great. I like how it mirrors your Twitter ID as well.
Yep. It's branding, baby, branding.
Yeah, that way no one can come to you and say, oh, what's your latest dirty job, Michael?
Yes. Yes.
Awesome. All right. Well, to our listening audience, thanks for sticking there with us for another edition. Thank you for bearing with us, getting through all of the fun and games that we've had to endure here with snow, ice, travel, stuff that have prevented us from playing games at work. And we're back, baby. We're back.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.